Today's podcast is brought to you by Daily Fantasy Nerd. Supercharge your daily fantasy sports research with their easy-to-use stats and tools. Start building winning lineups today. Visit goingfortwo.com/dailyfantasynerd for your free trial. That's goingfortwo.com/dailyfantasynerd. Start winning today.
You are now listening to Talk Loud Radio, sports, nerds, and pop culture.
Go right back to, oh, he must be a fan just because of Ron.
They were good at one point, you know, when they had Iverson.
So I would say you gotta subscribe to this podcast and my podcast.
What's up, podcast world?
What is going on, guys? All right, welcome to the show. This, of course, is goingfortwo.com's press coverage podcast presented by Talk Loud Radio. I'm your host, as always, Jeff Lambert. You can follow me on Twitter at JeffLambert77. That's Jeff spelled G-E-O-F-F. All right, guys, we have a great guest coming on tonight, a writer for goingfortwo.com. His name is Matthew Garrett. He's going to come on tonight and talk a little bit of NBA, a little bit of NFL, and a little bit about the NCAA tournament as well. But before we get into our guest tonight, a few things I wanted to mention here at the top. If you haven't already done so, guys, please go to the Google Play Store or the App Store for iOS and download the all-new Going For Two app. You can find it in both stores. It's free. It's got all of our content delivered there, as well as our podcast. You can find it streaming there as well. It's a great app. And if you do check it out, if you could go on and give us a five-star review, it'll be much appreciated, guys. Also, with Talk Loud Radio, we now have our own domain. You can just check us out at talkloudradio.com. Of course, you can still find us on iTunes, on Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, you know, all the usual places, and of course, in the Going For Two app as well. But we're excited to have our own domain now. You can go to Talk Loud Radio, no more confusing URL with the Podbean, you know, mixed in there somewhere. So talkloudradio.com, check it out. Pretty easy to remember. All right, if you haven't been to the site in a while, we've been running a crossover challenge, sort of a March Madness bracket challenge with the guys over at ClashOfTheNerds.com. They picked their eight contenders. They picked eight comic book characters and eight video game characters. And I picked my eight NBA guys and my eight NFL guys. We put them in a bracket. We did tiers. We did seeding, the whole nine. We've been voting on it for the whole month. We've put it out there each time. We had the 32 to start off, and then, of course, down to 16. Then we had the Elite Eight. Last week was the Final Four, and now we're down to the final two contenders. It's basically their champion, you know, out of their group on their side, ended up being Wolverine. And then our side of the things, the sports side of things, is Russell Westbrook. So definitely go to the site. When you go there, it should pop up automatically. It's the first thing you're going to see when you get to the site. Just take like 5 seconds. Just vote for your favorite between Wolverine and Russell Westbrook. If you're a sports fan, please vote for Westbrook because it was sort of a little challenge between us and Clash of the Nerds as to what is more popular, you know, sports, video games, comic books, whatever. So it's kind of a bragging rights for us if we can win this. Last I checked, it was pretty evenly matched, about 50-50 for both sides. So I'm hoping to encourage everybody to go there and vote for Westbrook. He just hit the record tonight, tied the record for most triple-doubles in a season. Should break it probably in his next game. So definitely vote for him. We're going to release the winner actually on their podcast right here on Talk Loud Radio. It'll be on the Let's Podcast show by the Clash of the Nerds guys. You can find it right here on Talk Loud Radio. I'm actually going to be going there on set to record sort of a bracket recap, you know, the things that we kind of saw throughout the brackets, things that surprised us, you know, whatever the case may be. And then we'll reveal the winner at the end, who actually won the contest. So definitely go there. Check it out. Goingfortwo.com. Make sure you vote. All right, let's see what's next. We have a special show coming up this weekend. I'll probably release it next Monday or Tuesday, depending on how much editing I got to do. But we're going to do a live NFL mock draft. I'm actually going to have five experts, mock draft experts for the NFL. They're going to come on the show. I've already assigned them each five or six teams that they're studying. They're going to have sort of a draft board for each team. And we're going to just do a live mock draft right on the podcast. This won't be pre-recorded. This won't be, you know, we didn't talk about this ahead of time, you know, so if, you know, so-and-so at pick number six picks, you know, whoever, that player is now off the board. So if somebody else had that guy on their board, now they got to scratch him off. Just like a real NFL draft, they don't know who's going to draft who. So we're going to just go through that. That'll be coming out next Monday or Tuesday. Should be pretty exciting. We've got some new guests on that podcast and some returning guests that have done, you know, this kind of thing before. I think Matt Sandell is going to be on the panel. We've had Tim Strobel on the panel before. He's going to be on there. But a couple new guys, some new faces as well. So should be pretty fun. It'll be our first sort of roundtable, you know, discussion with, you know, more than two people on a podcast. So it should be interesting. Let's see what else is going on. Of course, baseball kicked off this week. You know, I'm not a huge baseball fan. I do play a little bit of DFS for baseball, but I keep it sort of light because I don't know much about baseball. But we do have two writers that actually cover it for us. We got Brad Richter and Fantasy Beast 15 is his alias that he writes under. They're writing some MLB DFS content for us. They're doing it. Let's see. Fantasy Beast has put out, I believe, three already. Brad Richter, because he writes for multiple sites, may get one or two a week in there. He does his home run prediction, which is kind of cool. He keeps track of it throughout the season to see his success rate. Basically picks a player from each position that's going to hit a home run. You know, if they hit a home run, that's a hint for him. And if not, then of course it's a miss, and he keeps track of his percentages throughout the season. So it's pretty cool. So definitely check that out. Fantasy Beast has a pitcher's chart that he puts out on his articles each time, and then suggests a couple plays that you could pick, you know, for the day for cash games. So definitely really good content there. You want to check that out. And then we recently just added a golf writer, golf DFS writer. He hasn't put out any content just yet. We just brought him on this week, but be on the lookout for that as well. All right, I think that's all the housekeeping I've got here as far as promotions and such to go. We'll take a quick commercial break here, and then when we come back, we will have Matthew Garrett on the phone.
Do you need advice for your fantasy football team? How about your DraftKings or FanDuel lineup? Going4two.com has you covered. Going4two.com has exclusive content from some of the best fantasy writers in the industry, whose credentials include Bleacher Report, Fantasy Pros, and Fantasy Life. From advice columns to player ranks, Going4two.com has it all. Sign up for our newsletter to have all of our content sent to your inbox. Start winning today. Visit goingfortwo.com because no one remembers the extra point.
Guys, welcome back. As promised, we are here tonight with Matthew Garrett of goingfortwo.com. You could follow him at Matt Garrett. That's two R's, two T's, and the number 41, Matt Garrett 41 on Twitter. Matthew, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad. Just glad to get back into the studio and record a new podcast. I know you've been a writer for us for quite a while, and I haven't had you in the podcast yet, so just glad to get you on finally.
Hey, appreciate you having me. Looking forward to it all week.
Good deal, good deal. So I'm going to give you a quick open mic here. Just talk about yourself a little bit. How'd you get into writing? You know, kind of where you started, you know, whatever you want to talk about. Just kind of about yourself.
Well, basically the background about me is I'm a huge Eagles fan, like Kelly. I know Kelly's she's a bigger Eagles fan than me. She goes harder than I do. Big Mavericks fan. This is going into is actually my first opportunity to write. I had a blog about advertising for 2 or 3 years, and that kind of slowed down after I started doing sports writing. So I was a little more interested in sports than anything else. But yeah, going for two, Jeff, you gave me my first opportunity to start writing for a site. And I've been appreciative and I've just been thankful ever since that I get a chance to write for the Ulster too.
Good deal, man. We're glad to have you too. I think you did, what was your piece you did during the NFL? Was it four down territory?
Yeah, four down territory, just pretty much a weekly recap of four hot stories. And I did a few little tidbits at the end.
Definitely. Yeah, it was a good piece. It was much appreciated by our readers. I know it was one of our more popular NFL pieces, definitely. So, yeah, good stuff there. I know you typically do a lot of the articles where we do like the year-end awards for like NBA, NFL. So we'll be trying putting those together here pretty soon because the end of the NBA season is coming up.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go ahead and just jump right into the NBA here. And we'll talk about these awards a little bit here, sort of a prerequisite to an article we may put out here pretty soon. So with the, it's basically a week left, not even a full week, I don't think, of the NBA of regular season left over. Who's your coach of the year so far this year?
For me, it's got to be Mike D'Antoni. I mean, the Rockets last year, they ranked 8th in offensive efficiency, and now they jumped up to 2nd. Last year, they were 41-41, and now they've already won 52 games, and I think they have 6 games left to go. And somehow D'Antoni has turned James Harden to the point guard we all wish he was when Kevin McHale was running the show. So I'll give props to D'Antoni. I'm not a big believer in his system in the playoffs, but for right now, right here and now, the Rockets are 3rd. James Harden is playing the best basketball he's ever played. He's kind of a more explosive Steve Nash without, you know, Steve Nash is a better assist person. But it's got to be D'Antoni for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you on that as well. I think he's turned – I mean, Harden was always an MVP candidate, you know, going back to the year that he almost beat out Steph Curry 2 years ago. But he's taken Harden and just transformed his game. So I think just that alone is definitely a plus. I mean, I know Westbrook gets the big pub because he's averaging a triple-double. But if it wasn't for that, you know, Harden's got pretty close to triple-double stats himself. I think he's averaging like 28 points a game, 11.5 assists, and like 8 rebounds. So he's basically 2 rebounds away from averaging a triple-double. So, you know, he did that with Harden. And then Harden makes his teammates better too, which I think is a product of D'Antoni's system. You know, before Harden was always pubbed as like a, you know, sort of a ball hog, you know, even though he had like 5 assists per game on a career average, you know, the big talk last year was that he wouldn't pass the ball and he didn't trust his teammates. And D'Antoni goes there and makes him, you know, lead the league in assists basically. So it's pretty, a pretty big transformation. And I think a lot of credit goes to D'Antoni for sure. So I'm with you on that one. The only dark horse candidate I had in there, and it's more of what they started out doing and how they finished the season, and that's Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat, because they started off horrible. I mean, they were one of the worst teams. I don't think anybody could really name, you know, other than maybe Whiteside, anybody on their team. There are a lot of outcast players, and he sort of transformed that team right in front of our eyes, you know, over the course of the season. And I believe, last I checked, since January 15th of this year, the Miami Heat, I believe, still have the best record in the NBA from that point forward. So he would be my dark horse candidate. What do you think of Spoelstra?
I think that's a great pick. Spoelstra's always been a great coach. I don't think he ever got the credit he deserved since he had LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. But since they've left, the Heat have always been at least in playoff contention. I think they're the 8th seed right now. As of tonight, they're the 8th seed in the East. And so they have pretty much a good shot at making the playoffs. And like you said, from where they started to where they are now, I wouldn't be that angry if Spoelstra won Coach of the Year anyway.
Definitely, definitely. I think he definitely showed his coaching ability. I mean, like you said, he had, you know, LeBron, he had Dwayne Wade, he had, you know, he had superstars where now he really doesn't have superstars. He's got a, you know, a center that's pretty close to, you know, star status, but it's hard in this league to win with just a center. And I think he turned Deion Waiters into a star almost. I mean, I think he's out for the year now, but Waiters was a cast off from multiple teams and he made him into a great player. So I think he gets a lot of credit for all that.
Deion's about to get paid. You think he pay him this summer, or you think he goes elsewhere?
If he's smart, he'll stay with Miami, and they'll be smart to pay him because, yeah, he definitely had a great season. I mean, he was, like I said, he was cast off from multiple teams, and I think he had a good season, and if he's smart, he'll stay in Miami for sure.
I agree.
All right, well, looking at Rookie of the Year, of course, the big talk was Joel Embiid at the beginning of the season. He was pretty much a shoe-in to win Rookie of the Year. Of course, he goes out. I think he played a total of 31 games. I think Patrick Ewing was the only other player to win Rookie of the Year that played less than a full season. I think he played 52 games when he won Rookie of the Year. Do you think, one, do you think Joel Embiid has a chance to still get Rookie of the Year with just 31 games? And if you don't think he can get it, who do you think is the top candidate?
I don't think Joel can get it because of the time he got injured. I think if Joel would have gotten injured around this time or maybe a month ago while he was still fresh in our minds, then maybe he'll have a shot. But I think it's been too long. He's been out for, what, 2 months now?
At least, yeah.
It's been a long time since Joel went out. So I think for timing, for him-wise, I don't think he's going to win Rookie of the Year. My Rookie of the Year is the real dark horse candidate, and that's Malcolm Brogdon with the Bucks. I know everyone wants to go with Dario from Philadelphia, but stat for stat, Malcolm's per 100 possession ratings blow Dario's out of the water. He's shooting the three ball better. He has a better field goal percentage, a better free throw percentage, and he's averaging more assists than Dario. He's playing more meaningful basketball, which is, I don't know about other people, but that's important to me. Are you playing basketball that matters? Anyone can rack up stats when you're already out of playoff contention. But Malcolm is doing it for a playoff team, and he's exceeded expectations for a rookie.
Yeah, that's a good call. Actually, my last guest, Matt Sandell, comes on a lot to talk about NBA. That's his Rookie of the Year, too. And honestly, when he brought him up on the podcast, I had to go actually look him up to see exactly what he was doing. Because I play a lot of daily fantasy basketball, and you know, a lot of times I'm looking at fantasy numbers, and that's not always, you know, translates to NBA status. So I kind of was overlooking him. I had to go back and look at his stats. I'm like, okay, I could see where this could be Rookie of the Year. And now, you know, I still have Dario Saric just because I think with Joel Embiid being in Philly, there's a more of a spotlight on them. And I think that Saric has kind of taken the torch from Joel Embiid and kind of ran with it. And I think the Bucks get overlooked a little bit. I think, you know, when you got guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo on your team and stuff like that, I think you get a little bit overlooked. But I can definitely see Brogdon definitely winning the Rookie of the Year. But I think my pick right now would be Dario Saric.
And if Dario won it, that's another one. Like it's something I wouldn't be upset with either. If Dario or Malcolm were, or maybe if Ryder is, you know, if Joel is still fresh in their mind, if he won it, I wouldn't make too much of a complaint about it. But I was spoiled. I've seen Malcolm Brogdon. I used to live in Charleston. So I've seen Malcolm play at UVA a few times, and I've seen him up close. And this really isn't much of a shock for me that he's transitioned so well to the NBA.
Good deal. Good deal. All right, another one that's kind of up in the air. I don't know where we're going to go with this one either. Usually in the, you know, in the years past, it's been given to Jamal Crawford pretty much hands down. But sixth man of the year, who you got?
Eric Gordon by a hair. So his per 100 possessions rating is just a little bit better than Lou Williams. He's fourth in the league in made three-pointers, and he comes off the bench. The only people in front of him, I think, were Steph, Clay, and Harden. And then for me, it comes back to meaningful basketball. Eric Gordon has been playing meaningful basketball all year while Lou Williams, the Lakers, have slowly faded out. Now that Lou is also a Rocket, but throughout the body of work throughout the year, I'm going with Eric Gordon because meaningful basketball and just the made threes are amazing for someone who's coming off the bench.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm with you on Eric Gordon as well. I think body of work, if you're taking in the last like month or so, maybe not, but I think body of work. I think Eric Gordon, you would ask this like at the All-Star break, he was hands down the sixth man. I think he's faltered a little bit over the past like month or so, especially with the addition of Lou Will, because now they kind of fight for that same playing time. But yeah, I think Eric Gordon definitely. I think if Lou Will had stayed in L.A. and was still putting up numbers, he might give a little bit more of a run for his money. Because he was the leading scorer on the LA team coming off the bench, which is kind of a crazy stat. But now that he's on the same team as Eric Gordon, they're playing for the same minutes. I think Eric Gordon is more consistent. He's a more all-round player. Lou Will is very streaky. He can have a game where he can go for 40 and then come out the next game and only get like 4 points because his shot's not falling. So I think Eric Gordon overall, I think he's more consistent. A couple of the dark horses that I had in there is Zach Randolph, who's now coming off the bench for the Grizzlies after having a great career as a starter. He's a beast. You know, he's never been the most athletic guy, you know, in his entire career. He's just super fundamental. He can, you know, beat you in multiple ways. He's very old school. You know, he's got the up and under moves and the step back fade away from the post. So I think he would be a nice six man dark horse. And also Enes Kanter for Oklahoma City. I think he gets overshadowed a little bit because he doesn't play much defense. But offensively, he's probably one of the best big men in the league. And I think if he could put his defensive game even to like an average player, he could be a starter in this league for sure. But I think those two guys are my dark horse candidates.
I'd have no problem with Zach Randolph. I love Zach Randolph's game. He plays like an old man after a while. He just don't know how to stop. You know how he does it, but he does it. So
exactly.
I'm a huge fan of Zach.
That's a good good metaphor there, an old man at the Y. I like that. That's kind of how Zach Randolph's game is definitely personified. I like that. All right, the next one we got, this one's kind of gone to the same guy last couple of years as well, but I think it's a little bit more of a tighter race this year. It's a defensive player of the year. I got three names basically that are in contention: Rudy Gobert, Kawhi Leonard, and Draymond Green. Who you got for defensive player of the year?
For me, it's Draymond, Kawhi, then Rudy, and I give Draymond the slightest edge because he leads the league in steals, and he can guard any position on the floor. Not to say that Kawhi can, but Draymond does it nightly, and his defensive ranking is one in the league. Draymond, everyone talks about Klay and Steph at the rim, but Draymond is the key to the Warriors. Without no Draymond, there is no Warriors, there is no powerhouse. I think he's that valuable defensively. He does the dirty work for the Warriors. If it went to Rudy or Kawhi, again, no arguments for me. But for me, it's Draymond. He's the best defender on the best team in the league.
Yeah, I was just going to quote that same thing. I think Jeff Van Gundy said that a few times on the telecast the other night, that Draymond Green should get it just because he's the best defender on the best defensive team in the league right now. So he should hands down get it. I would love to see Rudy Gobert get it. I love watching him play. He's a very exciting player. He changes the game just by being on the floor. But I think if you're talking about overall defense, I think Dre Green definitely is, like you said, he can cover every position. It allows Golden State to do what they do with the switching, you know, constant switching, the pick and roll. You couldn't do that with a typical big man where he can pretty much guard any position. He can go back and guard the five. He can guard the one. So, yeah, I think it gives him a lot more freedom. And I think because of that, I think Draymond Green will get that award as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And how about the Jazz? The Jazz, I know they took the scenic route to rebuild them, but they're the four seed now, right? They're pretty much locked in at four.
Yep. They're pretty pretty amazing. I think that they've turned it around. Actually, they just missed the playoffs, I believe, in the last game of the season. I think they needed to win that game. Actually, I think what happened was is they needed someone to lose before them in the early game, and then if they would have beat the Lakers, I think they would have been in the playoffs. But of course, Kobe Bryant decided he wanted to go for whatever he went for last year, 60 points or whatever. He had other plans for how he wanted to go out. But yeah, I think the Jazz definitely. I think if the Jazz were on more primetime television, if they were a more exciting team, because they're boring to watch. They're like the old-fashioned Spurs. Or even the Grizzlies, you know, they're very slow paced. They run the slowest paced offense in the league. They're very old school. And I think if they were to get more primetime pub, I think Gobert would be a little bit higher up on this list. But I think Dre Green, because he's on the Golden State Warriors, he's got, you know, the best defensive team. He has probably the best team overall. I think he gets the award.
Hopefully Gordon doesn't run off the Boston in the offseason. The Jazz can keep this going.
Exactly. All right, so the big award now, this is the big heated debate. It's pretty much a two-man race at this point. For MVP, who you got?
So I've been in a group chat with my friends the past 2 weeks about this, and they've been going back and forth. But today I finally made a decision, and I'm going to go with Russell Westbrook for these reasons. Not only the triple-double, but I guess for me the most valuable player is what happens if you take Russell Westbrook off the Thunder, and what happens if you take James Harden off the Rockets? I think if you take Harden off the Rockets, they're not the three seed, but they're still fighting for a playoff spot. If you take Russ off the Thunder, they're probably the last team in the West, maybe the last team in the league. With that, a few stats. Let's see. Westbrook leads the league in scoring usage percentage, assist percentage, and efficiency. Like, he literally does everything for the Thunder, and he's dragged them to the sixth seed. Like I said, if you take Russ off the Thunder, they're competing with the Lakers for a lottery spot in the Lonzo Ball race. And if you take Harden off the Rockets, I think they're probably the eighth seed, maybe the ninth. They're still playing meaningful basketball today.
See, that's where I'm going to disagree with you, I think, a little bit. I'm on the Harden side, only because if you look at last season, I mean, they had Harden last year, and they weren't a playoff team. They had arguably the same team they do now, except for Dwight Howard not being there. They basically replaced Dwight Howard with Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, who I think I might take Dwight Howard over those two. So, and they weren't a playoff team last year. I know D'Antoni kind of changed things. He does add a sixth element to that, so to speak. But Harden, I think, makes his team so much better, where I don't know if Westbrook makes his team better. I think he himself is unbelievable, and I think he himself has dragged his team, like you said, into the playoffs. But you look at a guy like Victor Oladipo, you know, he doesn't make him better. I mean, he was better last year as a member of the Magic than he is this year. Now, that may be some of that, just the offense that he's in, or, you know, playing off the ball may hurt him a little bit. But Russ doesn't make his teammates better necessarily. Where I think if you watch Harden, the fact that he's leading the league in assists, or at least he was last time I checked, and you watch the attention that he gets from the defense and how he can find the other guys on his team, you know, throwing the alley-oops to Capella and, you know, whoever else is there, Harrell. I think Harden makes his team better, and he sort of put his team into that three seed, where I think Russ is sort of, like you said, he's dragged them into the playoffs, but I think he's done it basically by himself and doesn't make his teammates better. That's why I give a slight edge to Harden, but I wouldn't be upset if they went either way.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So what if we put all things equal? What if Russ plays for the Rockets and Harden plays for the Thunder? What do you think they'd be seated at right now?
I think if Russ played for the Rockets, I think it would be very similar to what it is right now in OKC. Because I look at that Rockets team and I don't see a lot of, you know, star talent. I mean, they got a bunch of guys that were six men on the teams they came from. You got Lou Will, you got Eric Gordon, you got Ryan Anderson. These are all guys that were, you know, six men or barely starters on their teams previous to coming to the Rockets. You know, they said they got Capella in the middle, but he's not much of an offensive threat. He's more of an alley-oop, rebound, energy kind of guy. You look at the Oklahoma City guys, I think if Harden was there, I think Oladipo is a better player. You know, I think they get Steven Adams and Enes Kanter involved a little bit more into the offense. So I really think that the OKC would be better if they had Harden there over Westbrook, believe it or not.
Okay.
Like I said, it's splitting hairs, and I think Russ might actually win it because of the way he's ending the season. I think he just tied tonight the triple-double record, so I think he has like one more game or two more games left to actually break the record. So I think he'll definitely do that. So that might sway people to vote for him just because of that triple-double sort of average for the season plus the record. But, I mean, like I said, Harden's numbers aren't far off. I mean, he's leading the league in assists. He's averaging about the same amount of points as Westbrook is. And he's averaging just two less rebounds. So if he was to grab two more rebounds a game, you know, he himself would be averaging triple-double for the season. So it's not like, you know, Russ is so much farther and away than Harden.
That's true. So do you think the triple-double is an arbitrary stat? I know I've heard some people say that before, like there's too much value in the triple-double. Do you think that's true, or is it something that we should be in awe of?
I think it's something we should be in awe of just because it's only happened, I believe, one other time in NBA history, and it was like decades ago. But at the same time, the fact that he has the triple-double instead of just the eight rebounds, I think it's sort of like the year that Adrian Peterson rushed for 2,000 yards, you know, after coming back from his ACL. And it sort of overshadowed the fact that Jamal Charles also did the same thing, only he got 1,800 yards. You know, it's sort of the same thing. Like, Westbrook is overshadowing Harden, you know, his great season, because his season is much better. If that makes any sense. It's not so much better that it's, you know, otherworldly. It's just they're both having excellent seasons, and Russ is overshadowing Harden just based on that triple-double stat.
Okay. I think you're starting to pull me over to the Harden side. I'm going to dig my heels on a Westbrook, but I wouldn't be angry if Harden got it either. I wouldn't be angry if Kawhi or LeBron got it either, if we're being completely honest. LeBron's still the best player on earth.
Yep, I agree. That's definitely something that's been talked about. We talked a little bit on the podcast this last time. I actually called into Kelly's show too because they were pumping Russ, and I had to defend my boy Harden. But I think honestly, if Harden and Russ and Kawhi were on a sheet, and you basically took their names away and had people vote on offense and defensive stats, I think Kawhi gets it. I think offensive and defensively, he's the better player. He plays on a great team. I think they're the two seed. You know, they may even be challenging for the one seed. I can't remember now where exactly they're seated. I know that at one point they had passed Golden State, but Golden State went on a run, so they might be the two seed now. But, yeah, I think Kawhi, I think because of his humble nature and, you know, he doesn't get quite much media press as Harden and Russ do, I think that hurts him. And I've compared this multiple times on this podcast and other podcasts, but the year that Derrick Rose won the MVP, if you looked at the stats, LeBron James was the MVP that year. I mean, he had completely better stats than Derrick Rose did, but Derrick Rose was getting all the media hype and the bring Chicago back to, you know, prominence and, you know, whatever else, and they gave the MVP to Derrick Rose. But if you look at LeBron James's numbers that year, I think he was better than his number of years, the years previous when he won the MVP award. So I think, you know, because of that media hype, I think it's going to be between Harden and Russ. And I think Kawhi and LeBron are taking the back seat on this one.
I completely agree with you. It's kind of like the same year Steve Nash won the MVP. I don't know if it was the first year or the second year, but Kobe had a far better year. Sort of like the same scenario.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I'm with you.
All right. Well, talking about the LeBron and his Cavs. So are we? Do you think we're still on a collision course for a Warriors-Cavs rematch? Or do you think there's somebody in the East or the West that could knock one of these teams out before they get to the finals?
I'm a believer in you're the king of the mountain, so someone knocks you off, and I don't see anyone who could do that. I think the Warriors have a tougher path to the finals, but the only team that's designed to beat the Warriors are the Cavs. No team in the West has enough bodies to throw at Steph and Durant and Klay to slow them. You can, like, Kawhi can stop one of them, but he can't stop all three of them. And in San Antonio, they don't have the bodies to guard all three, not even two, to slow them down. And I don't think Houston will. It's a D'Antoni system, so they,
they're not going to play defense.
This is going to be real biased. D'Antoni, to me, is the Gonzaga of the NBA. I'll never trust him. I'll never trust his system. It's cool in the regular season, and it might be okay in the first round, but usually in the seven-game series, the best team wins. As far as LeBron and the Cavs go, I know there's a two seed now, but to me, I feel like home court advantage does not match the Cavs because last year they walked into Golden State on game seven and won the title. So for me, was that in Houston? Was that in Cleveland? Was that in Golden State? I want to say it was in Golden State.
I think it was Golden State. Yeah, I think they had the home court advantage last year.
I thought they did. Yeah, so I don't think – so if there's a Game 7 in TD Garden in the Eastern Conference Finals, I don't think the Cavs would be fazed by it, even though I don't think it's going to get that far. Like I said, I think Cleveland and Golden State, is, why not make it three? Doesn't have a rubber match.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, I think we're definitely on the path for that, and I don't think it's going to be quite as easy as it was for both of them as it was last year. I think both of them kind of flew through the playoffs. The Warriors, of course, got pushed by OKC. The Cavs never really got pushed by anybody. But I think looking at all the different teams, I think Houston will present a different challenge for the Warriors. Because I think when they got Kevin Durant, they gave up a lot of their depth off the bench. And I think with the addition of Lou Williams, with Eric Gordon being there and Ryan Anderson, if he gets back healthy, you know, they're very deep now. They got scorers coming off that bench that when the Warriors go to their bench, you know, with some of the guys that really can't, you know, put up the same kind of points as Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, I think the Rockets can keep it close because I think, or even possibly push for the lead with those backup players. Their second unit's better than the Warriors' second unit. Now, I think overall, I think the Warriors still win that series, but I don't think it'll be like a sweep or a five-game series. I think it gets pushed six or seven in that series. Of course, the Spurs definitely will give them a challenge. We didn't get a chance to see that last year because OKC knocked them off. But I think the Spurs could give him a little bit of a run. And then in the East, I know everybody's talking about Boston because Boston's the number one seed right now, and they think that it's going to be Boston and Cleveland in that, you know, in the finals, or it's, I mean, the Eastern Conference Finals. But I like the Wizards. I mean, and the Wizards have been really pushing the Cavs, you know, in the regular season, and they're built to beat the Cavs. You know, they're built. The strengths of the Wizards team is the Cavs' weaknesses. You know, the Cavs, you know, don't defend the perimeter very well. You know, Kyrie Irving's not a good defender. You got John Wall, can pretty much do it all. You got Bradley Beal. So you got, J.R. Smith over there guarding Bradley Beal. And he's not a great perimeter defender either. So I think Bradley Beal can own that matchup. I think the one matchup that the Cavs actually have the advantage of, obviously, is the small forward position. But Otto Porter's coming into his own. He touches the floor a little bit. They got Markieff Morris that's going to pull Kevin Love away from the basket where he can't get as many rebounds because he can shoot the three as well. And then they have a true center in Martin Gortat, which is something that they struggle with, you know, rebounding. They got Tristan Thompson's a great rebounder, but he can't do it by himself. So I think the Wizards are built to beat the Cavs. And if they meet in the playoffs, I think that people are going to be surprised by them.
I'll have to keep my eye. I know I live close to D.C., but I haven't been paying much to the Wizards recently. Let me ask you a question, because what you just said kind of contradicts what I was thinking. I was thinking that the Cavs' size would give the Warriors fits because their center is Zaza, and the Cavs can throw Kevin Love and then Tristan, and they can play big. And Deron Williams is a big guard, and he could probably wear Steph out. And then Kyrie has shown to give Steph fits. Do you think the size of the Cavs plays into their favor, or do you think the Warriors, their pace is just too much for that size to really make a difference for the Cavs?
I think it's going to come down to that. Like, whichever team can impose their style of play is what's going to come down to who's going to win the series if it does become Warriors and Cavs. Because you're right. I mean, they are a bigger team. And then the Golden State Warriors, of course, like to run more. I do think that the way to beat the Warriors is A, with depth, which the Cavs do have that. And then I think it is with the big man, because if you look at OKC last year, I mean, they had Cantor and Steven Adams, which is not typical to have two big men like that, you know, in this day and age in the NBA. And they pushed them to seven games because of those two big men. And I think if the Cavs can play big and keep the Warriors from running, and of course, the key to keep the Warriors from running is to hit shots. You know, if you're missing your shots and you're getting long rebounds and the Warriors are able to push that ball up the court, you know, you're in trouble. But if you're hitting your shots, like I think that game that I think LeBron and Kyrie both went for 41. You know, they hit a ridiculous amount of their shots, and that put the Warriors on their heels. So I think if they're hitting their shots, there's no stopping the Cavs, I don't believe.
I agree. And now I have to go back and watch some Wizards tape.
Definitely, because I think they're a dark horse. I've been touting them all year, so hopefully if they do meet, they don't make a fool out of me and get blown out or get swept. But yeah, I've been touting them since about All-Star break, because I've been watching them a couple of their regular season games, and they give the Cavs fits. All right, let's see. Talking about the NBA playoffs, and of course, we just came out of the NCAA tournament, March Madness. The championship game was last night. What do you think is the better sporting event? Is it the NBA playoffs, or is it the March Madness?
I think March Madness is a lot more entertaining, but the NBA playoffs gets it right. The best team every year in the NBA usually wins. In the NCAA, you can catch fire and you can find yourself in a national title game, just like UConn did a few years ago. But the NBA, it's the best out of seven. The best team usually wins. But the beauty of March Madness is America loves a good underdog story, like South Carolina. And the underdog has a fighter's chance. And entertainment-wise, I prefer to watch March Madness over the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, especially that first round of the NBA. It's pretty much, you know, how fast can we get through this first round and get to the next round? Whereas in the NCAA tournament, you've got upsets pretty much in every round of the series or the tournament. So, yeah, I think if you're just tuning in to watch, you know, kind of coming off the with no sort of dog in the fight, so to speak, I think the March Madness is definitely a better tournament. But overall, NBA playoffs definitely get it right. People complain about the length of the playoffs, but personally, I love it. You know, it's a long, you know, long drawn out thing. But when you're a fan of the NBA, you want to see as much basketball as possible. I love seeing the seventh game. It's sort of the most exciting thing that you can have, I think, in sports, is a seventh game of anything. You know, whether it be baseball or basketball, whatever the case may be. When it's a seventh game and it's do or die, I think it's very exciting to watch. I think the NBA playoffs as a whole, I think, like you said, they get it right. They do it the right way. But if you're just going to jump in as a, you know, like myself, I'm not a huge college basketball fan. But if I'm going to jump in and watch, you know, one or two games of a tournament, I'm going to watch the NCAA tournament because it's a lot more exciting on a per game basis.
I'm with you 100%.
All right. Speaking of NCAA basketball, too, I wanted to bring up this a little bit as well. UConn women, they finally lost a game. I think the streak ended at 111. Now, do you think that this dominance of the UConn women over the last couple of years, and they're, you know, constantly blowing teams out and not even having a game, do you think it's good for their sport to have a dominant team like that, or do you think it hurts their sport?
I think dominance of any time is great for any sport, especially let's take women's college basketball. If there was complete parity throughout all of women's college basketball, would we even talk about it? Would it be any talking points to bring up during SportsCenter? I don't think so. I think UConn's dominant. I know people think it's boring, but it gives the sport the attention that it needs. And also, as the streak, it's always amazing to see streaks like that. Who wins 111 games in a row?
That's crazy.
I think that's crazy. It's amazing. It's something that we should cherish, because who knows if we'll ever see that again. And second, the bigger the legend grows, the bigger the streak grows, the more people want to see Goliath go down. And that's why I even watched the second half of the Mississippi State UConn game, and it was electric. I think people want to see Goliath go down, but Goliath has to become Goliath first. But I think dominance of any kind in any sport is good for the sport.
I agree 110%. That's where I was going with my argument as well, that, you know, if UConn's not winning 111 games or even 100, we're not talking about them. You know, they're not on this podcast. They're not on SportsCenter. They're not leading SportsCenter off when they lose. You know, there's no attention. I think fans of the sport, if you're already a fan of the sport, regardless of the streak, you probably want parity. Because if you're not a fan of UConn, then you think you have no shot. So if you're a fan of the sport already, then you probably want parity. But America wants dominance. America wants to see, like you said, they want to see Goliath go down. You know, they want to see, like, Tiger Woods for so many years is dominant. You know, I've never watched a golf tournament in my life until Tiger Woods was winning tournaments. And I was like, okay, let me turn in and watch this guy. You know, and now that he's gone, honestly, I haven't watched a golf tournament since then. But that kind of dominance brings people like myself that aren't necessarily fans of the sport to the sport. Now it's up to the sport and the marketers and everything else to sort of capture me and keep me into that sport, you know, which doesn't always happen. But I think the dominance is what brings us there to begin with. You know, in the MMA, you had, I can't think of her name right now. I'm trying to think of her name. Who's the one that was dominant?
Ronda?
Yes, Ronda Rousey. She was dominant. You know, I didn't even know women fought in MMA until Ronda Rousey. So, you know what I mean? Like that brought me into the sport, you know, that I was talking about it. So those kind of things, I think, definitely bring attention to the sport. And I think it's just up to the sport itself to now capture that and keep that audience there.
I'm with you again. I'm with you 110% on that. Dominance brings butts to the table.
Definitely. Definitely. All right. Let's talk about the men's tourney now. So what do you think of the whole tournament as a whole? Do you think it sort of, you know, got the hype that it needed? You think it was sort of what you expected, or how do you think it went overall?
For me this year, like I usually watch the first two rounds, and then as we get close to the championship game, I might tune out until, you know, the final four. But for me this year, it was average. Like, it wasn't anything too exciting. Like, last year's national title game was storybook. It was perfect. But it wasn't anything too underwhelming. I had UNC winning it all anyway, so I wasn't too surprised. It was just okay for me. Like, the game last night was, I watched the last 8 minutes of it. It was awful. I don't know how people watched both halves. Like, the refs just took over. Like, I don't think that this year it might be down in the fact that the refs kind of influenced how the game was played. But for me, it was just kind of like your average NCAA tournament. Just enough upsets. We had our Cinderella in South Carolina. But overall, who I thought the best team pulled it out and won. So, I mean, I really have no complaints outside of the referee.
Yeah, I think because coming from me, like, I'm not a fan of the sport. I tune in during March Madness, basically. I'll maybe tune in a few weeks before just to sort of get my bracket set up. This year, unfortunately, I got so busy with my blog and the podcast and everything else was going on. I forgot to fill a bracket out. So I had no sort of rooting interest in the tournament at all. And so I kind of tuned in here and there to watch a couple of the games, but because I had no rooting interest, I wasn't really into it. I did tune in to watch the Final Four, and then I watched the championship game. And I felt like you did. I felt like that game was kind of boring. I there was a lot of foul calls. Neither team shot very well. I don't think anybody really dominated. I think that most outstanding player, I believe, you know, he didn't even shoot very well. He's like 7-for-19, something like that. You know, he came up big. Right. He had some big shots, obviously, but it wasn't like he dominated the entire game from front to back. He got hot when he needed to get hot. You know, and I think that the game kind of ended on a bittersweet sort of ending with the block and then the score and then the quick turnover and then the foul. I think that, you know, sort of prevented any kind of Cinderella sort of, you know, call timeouts. Let's foul. Let's, you know, get a shot to win the game. It sort of got rid of that sort of element of the game. So I think it was a little bit boring of a game, but I think, you know, the tournament itself as a whole, I think, you know, from what I saw, you know, it's typical stuff. You have your Cinderellas, you have your upsets. But there wasn't any, at least from my perspective, there wasn't a lot of star power. There wasn't that Steph Curry that sort of captured, you know, America's imagination, you know, watching this guy play. I didn't get that. I don't know if you saw that or not, or if I just missed something, but there wasn't that one player that was like, I got to tune in to watch this guy because he's playing ridiculous right now.
I felt that way about Lonzo until you said, but again, do people watch Lonzo because of Lonzo, or do people watch Lonzo because of his father? I enjoy watching Lonzo play, and I enjoyed watching UCLA play. But yeah, but when I think that's the tricky part about the NCAA tournament. Once the big names like Lonzo, the Markelle Fultz even make it, and once the big names, like, you know, the top lottery picks of the draft are gone, there's really no need watching. I think Justin Jackson was the biggest star last night. I think he's projected to go on, like, the teams. So, right. Yeah, I think I agree with you. There really wasn't a lot of star power last night in the game. Not a lot of lottery picks playing. But, I mean, I guess that's the beauty of March Madness. Everyone has a chance.
That's true. That's just true. Yep. All right. Let's switch sports here now. Of course, this is April, and we're going into pretty soon here in a few weeks. The NFL draft is going to kick off, and all the NFL buzz will start up all over again. Of course, we had the free agent season. It's sort of still out there. There are some big name free agents still out there, but for the most part, it's died down. In your opinion, what teams had the best offseason so far to this point?
It's got to be the Patriots, right? At first, I was thinking the Eagles because that's just my bias. It's hands down the Patriots. Gronk seems to be healthy. He's in wrestling rings and he's running around. The Red Sox opened the game playing with Tom. They shored up the secondary. Brandon Cooks is there. I don't want to be in the AFC, especially the AFC East, because I don't know. Belichick has to take average receivers and they won the Super Bowl. Now he has the legit speedster in Brandon Cooks. Like, it's just not fair. Adrian Peterson might be on the way. Brady might be able to play three or four more years if the Patriots keep loading, giving him all this talent to play with. I mean, and they're not even done. They still could trade
Garoppolo.
What's the guy? Yeah, they could still trade Garoppolo. And then I think they were still talking about making a trade with New Orleans, another trade. So, like, the Patriots still have a lot of cards to play in their deck. I mean, they're just primed for another Super. The AFC might as well just cancel because it's going to be the Patriots next year.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that they won a Super Bowl and they had the best offseason. Usually it's the other way around. You win the Super Bowl and you lose all your big players. They all go elsewhere to get big contracts. Instead, the Patriots just reload their roster, and now they're even better than they were last year. It's crazy to think that. The only dark horse candidate I had would be the Giants. I love the addition of Brandon Marshall out there. I think it's going to definitely help that offense. It's going to help Odell Beckham. I think they're kind of in the running for, you know, one of those top name running backs out there if they can add one of those guys. But yeah, I'm with you. Patriots, hands down, get, you know, best offseason so far. On the flip side, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I was like, I don't even want to think about having to play Brandon Marshall and Odell twice a year, but such is life.
Yep, because you're a Redskins fan, right? No, you're an Eagles fan. You said
I'm an Eagles fan.
That's right. You just live in this area, but you're an Eagles fan.
Yes.
All right. So on the flip side of the best offseason, who has had the worst offseason so far?
For me, Washington has had the worst offseason, and it's not even related to players. The GM situation, like, this whole offseason has just shown how much dysfunction is going on in Washington's organization. And after that, then you have Pierre Garçon's left, DeSean Jackson's left, Kirk Cousins wants out. Like, there's so much dysfunction going on in D.C. right now. I mean, sure, they signed Troy Pride to a one-year deal, but to me, Washington, they're just in a tailspin, which is usual for a Dan Snyder team.
I agree. You know, I'm close to D.C. as well, so I hear all the talk on the talk shows in the morning, the sports talk. And it's just, there's the dysfunction. I mean, even when they had the GM, when they had McLuhan, it felt weird because they still had Bruce Allen there. You know, there's just too many Chiefs, not enough Indians, it seems like. They were, you know, basically doing the same job. So I wasn't sure quite how that dynamic worked. And, of course, apparently it didn't work because they got rid of him in a very sort of weird way, too. I mean, there's all these rumors coming around. They had some rumor about how McLuhan was visiting his deceased grandmother, and then, like, picture surfaced on Twitter how he's walking his dog. You know, it was some weird, crazy stuff. Like, just if you're going to fire him, just announce that you're going to fire him. Don't lie about it and make it, try to cover it up. It's such a dysfunctional franchise that I don't know what to do. I thought they had turned that corner, but apparently not.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially the rumors about putting it on his drinking problem. Like, that,
yeah.
That in and of itself is just, that's too low.
I agree.
Even for Washington standards.
Agreed. And I'm hoping that it stays that way because I want to get Kirk Cousins on my team next year. I'm a 49ers fan. So we got their former offensive coordinator out there, and Kirk Cousins, you know, the guy that basically drafted him, is out there. So I'm hoping that, you know, let him play good this season. And then next year they'll have to, they can't franchise him again. They'll have to either transition tag him or let him go. And then I hope we can get him to my team. So we'll see what happens.
I wouldn't be shocked if he's wearing a 49ers uniform in a couple of months. I still think he wants out. He might be, I think he's still quiet, but I think behind the scenes he's expressing his desire to leave.
I agree with you. There's no reason why he'd want to stay. I mean, other than getting paid as much money as he's getting paid, they obviously don't believe in him, or they would have paid him already.
Exactly.
All right, now I'm going to put you in an NFL GM role, and I got a few things I want to ask you your opinion on and what you would do in situation. So if you're an NFL GM and you need a quarterback, and this is sort of at the end of free agency, there's nothing really left. You didn't have a good draft. You didn't get a quarterback in the draft. The only two guys on the market right now that are worth as a starting quarterback, or maybe they're not worth it, is Colin Kaepernick or Johnny Manziel. Who are you taking and why?
I'm going to take my same argument from our basketball talk to this talk, and I'm going to take Kaepernick for a few reasons. I'll take Cap because he's excelled playing meaningful football, and he was one play away from winning the Super Bowl. Cap's touchdown to interception ratio last year was 4-1. He threw 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. The last time Manziel played, his touchdown to interception ratio was 1-1. I think the talks about Cap being a distraction, I think that's like kind of a smokescreen, because, I mean, you follow the 49ers. I think Chip said it. A few teammates said that Cap was 100% dedicated to football. After he explained to the locker room what his position was, he was no distraction. I think all that is just more fluff than anything. And the biggest thing for me is, like I said, Cap is 100% football. According to his teammates, like he had, outside of the protest, he really hasn't had anything. Meanwhile, there are reports of Manziel coming to practice drunk. There's a domestic violence issue. There's the drug issue. There's the partying issue. He's proven he's really immature. But again, if it's one thing the NFL taught us, they'll accept domestic violence and the drinking problem. Just don't speak out against the wrongdoings of our judicial system. So if I were a GM, I'd roll the dice on Cap. I take the PR hit, because winning cures everything. If Cap comes in and has a decent season, then all that goes to the bay.
Definitely. I'm with you 100%, because Manziel is the distraction to his team. Not only is he a distraction to his team off the field, if you're coming to practice drunk or even the suspicion of being drunk, you know, you're a distraction on the field as well, and you're obviously not committed to your craft. Colin Kaepernick, you know, back before he was, this whole, you know, kneeling before the anthem thing, you know, he went in the off season one year to improve his mechanics by working with Kurt Warner. You know, that's not what Manziel would do. Manziel goes to Vegas in the off season. You know what I mean? He goes and parties in the off season. You know, Colin Kaepernick went to Kurt Warner and said, "Hey, I want to improve my mechanics. You know, I need more touch on my passes." And, you know, he went there to improve his craft. You know, those kind of things get kind of pushed to the side when we look at Kaepernick and what he did this past season, you know, with the kneeling in front of the, you know, before the national anthem and all that. But yeah, I agree. I think Kaepernick has shown that he can be successful at this level, and we haven't seen it from Manziel yet, and we haven't seen the commitment from Manziel either. So he can say all he wants, you know, that he's a changed man, that he saw his, you know, his errors and everything else. He wants back in the NFL. It's just crazy to me to think that there's rumors of Johnny Manziel being, you know, sort of talked about as a New Orleans Saint. And there's no rumors of Kaepernick being anywhere right now. It's just, I can't fathom it. I can't fathom why they would want Manziel on their team as a distraction, but not want Kaepernick, who's shown nothing but, you know, dedication to his craft his whole career.
Especially in a city like New Orleans, right? When Berger Street is in your backyard.
Exactly.
Like that's the worst thing other than going to Vegas. Now, let me ask you a question. So as a 49ers fan, as a fan base as a whole, Did the fan base kind of rally behind Kaepernick after the season started? Because my feeling is, if a team signed Kaepernick, yes, they will get some blowback from fans. Once the season starts, I feel like the fan base, like the city, will kind of die down from that and start focusing on winning games and supporting the team. Am I right in that notion, or am I a little off on it?
No, you're definitely right in that notion. I think the fans definitely saw exactly what was – I think the media sort of brushed over a lot of the bigger points. I mean, Kaepernick said he was going to – give, I believe, like $1 million or maybe even more than that, you know, to charities. And he said it publicly, but then no one ever actually followed up on him. But he actually did go and give that money to charity, you know, and did different things. He went out into, you know, did all kinds of, you know, rallies and different things for this whole cause that he was behind. He wasn't just, you know, saying it just to say it. You know, I think that kind of got brushed over. And I think if you actually look at what he's done, I mean, he's done more than most, you know, when it comes to this topic. And yes, what he did, you know, brought attention. It was uncomfortable for everybody. But the fact is if he had done it the other way, you know, nothing would have happened. Nothing would have changed. We wouldn't even be talking about it. But the fact that he did it the way he did it, we did talk about it. You know, things are changing. There's more awareness around it. So what he did worked. I know people don't like the way he did it, but it did work in the sense that he got, you know, attention. We're still talking about it. You know, the season's over with. You know, it's been done for a few months and we're still talking about it. So it definitely worked. And I think, you know, I think we can't appreciate that until, you know, a year or two down the road when things have changed, hopefully.
I'm with you 100% on that one.
All right, let's get back to your GM role here. You got a need for running back, and you got these two big names that may or may not be washed up yet. We got Adrian Peterson and we got Jamaal Charles, both free agents right now. Who are you taking?
Well, I'm tackling this question as the role of the Eagles GM, because I'm an Eagles fan. If I'm the Eagles, or depending on the offense I run, if I need a running back that needs to catch screens or needs to run routes, I'm taking Jamaal Charles. From a personal standpoint, I'm taking Adrian Peterson because he's a freak of nature and nothing can hurt him. And if he does get hurt, he'll be back sooner than any other person who's walking this earth. I'm a big Adrian Peterson fan. I love the way he runs. He runs violent. Like I said, he's a cyborg. I love Adrian Peterson's game. And if I'm a GM, I'm taking Adrian Peterson.
All right. So you think if you're in a pass-happy offense, you're going Jamaal Charles. But if you need a true running back, you're going with Adrian Peterson. Am I right?
Yep.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I'm a little leery on what Jamaal Charles has left to offer, only because he is a smaller guy. And, you know, through his career, he's relied on his quickness and his speed to avoid the big hit. You know, the big hit is going to knock him out of the game because he is a small guy. And I'm afraid that with the injuries he's had, that he's lost that step or that quickness. And if he has, he's going to take those big hits and not going to be able to last the entire season. Where Adrian Peterson, through his career, looks for those big hits. You know, he wants to deliver the big hit. He's a much bigger body. He lays the lumber. So I think if I'm picking a running back, I'm going Adrian Peterson, because I think his running style will help his career last a little bit longer than relying on quickness and speed, because quickness and speed is the first thing to go.
Absolutely. Now, I will say, if I did pick up Jamaal Charles, I would make it a priority to draft a running back this year so that to try to avoid that as much as possible. With this, if I had Adrian Peterson, I wouldn't be too concerned if I didn't draft a running back.
Agreed 100%. Because, yeah, I think Jamaal Charles' style, unless they make him a third down, you know, running back where he just comes in just to catch passes, I think he's not going to be an every down back unless he still somehow has that same speed and quickness that he had, you know, in years past, which I can't imagine that he does. All right.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Obviously, I think he doesn't have much left in the tank either.
Agreed. All right, last one I got here for you. So you have the first or second pick in the draft. So you're either the Browns or the 49ers. Are you trading that pick for Jimmy Garoppolo in his four games last year that he put out?
I'm going to give you two names. This is going to clarify my answer. Ryan Mallett and Matt Castle. I would not give up anything for Garoppolo. If I'm the Browns, if I'm the Niners, I take the best player available and I start to build however I can. I'm not falling for the Patriots tricks. I'm not falling for the backup QB. I don't care how good Garoppolo was in four games. If he was that good, the Patriots would be holding on to him. Because Tom Brady, he's not going to play 6 or 7 years. I think Tom has 2 years left. If Garoppolo was that good, the Patriots wouldn't be trying to trade him.
I agree.
They don't think he's easy replaceable.
Yep, I agree 110%. And I hope that my team does not make that mistake and take Jimmy Garoppolo and give up that second round pick. Now, if we can get Garoppolo for less than second round pick, you know, if we're giving up like a fifth and a fourth or a fifth and a sixth or something or some crazy other combination, then maybe. But if we're giving that second round pick up, I really hope that we don't do that. Because that second round pick is valuable. Now, there's not a quarterback in the draft this year that I think that we should take at number two. I think we should use that pick on something else and then just cross our fingers and hope that we can get Kirk Cousins the next year or get another quarterback in the draft. But yeah, I hope that we don't make that mistake. Now, I could see the Browns making that mistake, because it seems like ever since Bill Belichick has left the Browns, he either takes their players and turns them into stars, or he gives them his trash and they just basically take it from him. It just seems to be the way he's done it his entire career there in New England. It seems like he takes the Browns players and suddenly they become these great players. And they end up with his trash. And I think if he was to do that, I think Garoppolo would go there and not succeed in that Browns team there.
I agree 100%. That's a Cleveland move. They do have two first-round picks. They have the Eagles' first-round pick. I wouldn't be shocked if they gave that to the Patriots. And the Patriots, knowing them, they'd somehow end up with Myles Garrett, because that's just what happens to the Patriots. And they'd go on to win three more Super Bowls. But, yeah, if I'm a GM, I don't even pick up. If the Patriots call about Garoppolo, I hang up. I don't even want to talk about it.
Exactly. 100% agree with that one. All right, man, that wraps up the show tonight. I want to thank you again for coming on. Hopefully we'll get you on again, before the start of the football season, and we'll talk some more football. Maybe after the draft, we'll get you back on. Guys, again, you can follow him, of course, at MattGarrett41. That's two R's and two T's. He writes for goingfor2.com, so check out his stuff at goingfor2.com. And we hope to get you back on the podcast. Maybe after the draft, we'll talk about some Philadelphia Eagles moves.
Absolutely. Hey, Jeff, thank you for everything. Thanks for giving me this opportunity. And if you guys go to my Twitter page, a good friend of mine is starting a personal training company. He's been working on it for months. He does it through Skype. Everything's at home. Everything is on my Twitter page. Jeff, thank you for everything. Thanks for giving me this opportunity to write for you. And just everything that you've done for me, I really appreciate it.
All right, man. We appreciate you as well, and we look forward to some more stuff from you.
All right. Take it easy.
You too.